નમોતસા ભગવતો અરહતો સમ્મા સંબુદ્ધસા નમોતસા ભગવતો અરહતો સમ્મા સંબુદ્ધસા નમોતસા ભગવતો અરહતો સમ્મા સંબુદ્ધસા બુદ્ધાં ધમ્માં સંગાં નમસ્સા. So I'm gonna go straight into your questions. This one question I received this afternoon. The thoughts and chains of associations seem like sucking vortexes in which the stream of attention is inclined to flow. Thoughts and associations, vortexes, and they suck in the attention. You get the picture. If one is able to stay with the attention by a chosen object of meditation, is this not rather a power of mental renunciation than of active interest or conventional concentration? So that's the question. Right, so I mean, this is a bit complex, isn't it? A bit sounds a bit. So we've got these vortexes of thoughts and associations which suck in your attention, and hence the question that if then this ability to then, in spite of that, to stay with our chosen object of attention, like say the breath, whether that is then not rather like actually the power of renunciation of all those, attracting. The vortex of attracting thoughts and associations, so that I can renounce them to then just stay with what I've chosen, which is the breath, rather the opposite, like an active interest in concentration or something in the object. So that's the question, seems. This seems to be possible alone with sati. So, second question, is samadhi then only a result of sati? Yes, I mean I think that's quite an interesting and probably it's quite accurate description of, of how meditation can feel, and so I think this is a possibility, a valid point. If I just go to my own experience, then maybe most of the time, like if I'm trying to do Anapanasati, then my thoughts and chains of associations usually don't feel to me subjectively like sucking vortexes. They are more like, feels more like, it's more like a extended kind of field with which has this more like, not like a sucking vortex, but more like the opposite, I mean, not that I'm experiencing that like a rotating wheel, but that has is like a wheel that has more like a centrifugal kind of power of pulling the mind out. So in that sense, kind of distracting, isn't it? So the mind kind of spreads out. And so rather than staying with the breath, which is a little bit more like in the center, not in the center of your body, certainly. And often I think it can be the way, isn't it? If I stay with Anapanasati, we've got this intention. Yes, I wanna pay attention to my breath. And much of the time, we're kind of aware of the breath, but it's a bit kind of in the background. We know it's happening all right, but meanwhile, the mind is actually occupied with things that seem to pull on the attention a bit more stronger, which are on the foreground, and it can even be a bit kind of this luring kind of thing. Well, the breath is there anyway, it's not gonna run away, so I can always come back to it, and I know it's there, I'm kind of in touch with it. But meanwhile, I'm just gonna sort out, this what I'm gonna do tomorrow and whom I'm gonna invite for the meal and what I'm gonna say to Hugo, who, yesterday told me this and I think he isn't right and I'm gonna have to put him straight. And once I've sorted this one, then I come back to the breath. And on and on and on and on it goes, because the mind, it's just likes to be active, and the breath might initially feel comparatively boring, and it's kind of safe because it's always there anyway, And all sorts of association like vortex sucking in. Yeah, sometimes that's to me is more like when something pops up and with these kind of random associations that we often have, just the background noise and the mind always just being finding something to be busy with. Which often is not actually of any real importance. It just gives you the feeling that, well, I'm still here, you know, I'm thinking, therefore I am. And then suddenly something pops out which just is really charged with emotional energy, no? Like if you get upset about something, then it really becomes a vortex where the mind gets sucked into that. At some point, you're spun out of that again, and then you say, oh, you know, where was I? And you come back to the breath for a little while. And then I said, oh, yeah, okay. And then you start wandering off again, thinking about this and that and the other. Yeah, I think it's a valid way to explain or talk about it. It is to a certain extent this, like, samadhi and increasing samadhi has something to do with this power of the mind of renunciation, which is also a kind of restraint. The Buddha had the Pali word for that. It's sangvara. Indriya sangvara is the restraint of the sense faculties. So this capacity of not following out this centrifugal force to restrain this tendency to distraction and getting interested here and there and just more staying home. So becoming more concentrated, more collected in that sense, can very well, I think, be described as this increase in practice of letting go the outward movement. And so you just increase in your rest with what remains. Now, if all this, what here you describe as vortexes, you know, falls away or is not of interest anymore, then you rest with, well, there might be more things that still remain, but the field of interest becomes more simplified. And what sticks out is hopefully what you have determined at the beginning of what you're interested in. It's the body and the breath. So increasingly, the mind is going to stay more with the breath, and it's moving out less. And that is, indeed, it is a process of increasing letting go. Samadhi is, you can describe it like that. Then interesting, actually, to me, what also can happen is once the mind does stay more with the breath, and the breath comes more to the foreground, or whatever your meditation object is, rather than just being that background, no? If it's more the foreground, and the attention starts to focus on with it, then actually even the breath can actually become a sucking vortex in which the stream of your attention is inclined to flow. You know, you suddenly notice that your attention really kind of hones in on the breath and really wants to get sucked into the breath. That's actually sometimes when it gets really interested, you know, suddenly, you know, the monkey mind gets hold of the breath and gets traction and you're going to go somewhere, you know, and sometimes samadhi in that sense, and I also can actually pick up kind of momentum. That's when often all these kind of things start to happen that I talked about kind of earlier today, isn't it? When joy starts to arise, mental excitement, physical, a change of the perception of the body, which usually in a very pleasant way, except if you get afraid because it's unusual, it can of course also happen, but it usually becomes more refined, more light, more smooth, more connected, just nice. So yes, I think there are different ways of talking about this and of experiencing this. Also, as I keep stressing, our minds do function differently. In many ways, of course, our reality, you know, is very much a shared reality, and in some ways we're all the same. But also, you know, in the detail, sometimes we're also, you know, also unique, you know, and things do work different for every person. It is true, like the last bit of this question, this seems to be possible. Well, it says alone with sati, I think you mean kind of only with sati, if sati is there. That's how I would interpret it anyway. So is samadhi only a result of sati? Well, samadhi is a result of various factors coming together. Well, that's how the Buddha would have described it. And sati is one of them, and it's a very key factor. I would certainly agree it doesn't work without sati. You have to have sati there, presence. No samadhi without sati. At least not samadhi in the way the Buddha talks about it, you know, of collected attention. You know, because without sati, there's no attention, so there's nothing much to collect, actually. But then there are some other factors that come in there as well, like sangvara. But there are these qualities that we need to have, like this capacity of restraining our tendency to distraction. You know, that's what the Buddha called sangvara, the capacity of restrained. You might call it like, is it like a psychological muscle, part of our psychological immune system, the capacity of being, of saying no to ourselves, to our, you know, desire mind, the inner dog that just wants to leap out there immediately when it smells something interesting. No? So restrained, this what I called this morning, like this kind of gentle form of stubbornness, not to stick with your intention, to not just always change your plan because something new is coming up. So persistence, patience, the capacity for internal softness, kindness, no? Because we are saying like true samadhi comes out of a sense of inner ease, of happiness, of contentment. And without kindness, you know, in the mix in there, that's very difficult. You know, if you just try to concentrate out of a sense of competition or prove yourself, or with an overblown inner critic, which kind of push you into samadhi, the motto like, concentrate, you know, get it, funny, don't you get it, concentrate. You're not going to get some samadhi out of that. You might sometimes be able to hang on and, you know, pin down that dog, pin down the chicken, but it's not going to lead you into very beautiful places, I think. So to use our image again, to describe that, sati definitely has to be in the mix there. Sati is like the sentinel. And when sati's function with samadhi, no, sati has many functions, but particularly with samadhi, of course, is the sentinel that is watching over the chicken coop, right? And it's going to alert us if the chicken is about to escape, right? Because we need sati, we need presence to actually know that, to notice that. So if sati is asleep, our chicken is gone, right? And, you know, by the time we find out, if sati kind of wakes up every 10 minutes and says, oops, oh, it looks like the chicken is gone. Alarm, everybody looking for the chicken. You invest a lot of energy in trying to get your chicken back, you know. Try and find it if you give it 10 minutes to escape. But then sati is not going to run after the chicken. No, sati is just presence. So the function of sati is to notice. So it's going to alert you. And then sati needs to have, of course, some instructions about what to look out for. That falls into the function of sampajanya, no, clear comprehension. So part of the wisdom faculty. Or to put it in some box, like was it yesterday when we talked about mindfulness, I talked about the two accompanying factors, not the three that always have to come together. You said right view, right mindfulness, and right effort. No? So we have mindfulness here, that right mindfulness, so it's a sentinel. Right view, that's the wisdom aspect, isn't it? That's like sampajanya, that is your the understanding that you take with you into the meditation, which sets up your intention. Like, you know, this is about, say, it's about understanding dukkha and the end of dukkha. And the intention right now is, you know, the next hour, I want to really stay with the breath. I want to see to develop some more samadhi because I understand, you know, within the context of my practice, that's going to lead me to a place where I want to go, where I have more calm, a clearer mind to understand the nature of dukkha, the ending of dukkha. So that's setting up, you know, coming from right view, sampajanya, you know your purpose, you pay attention to the three characteristics and so forth and so forth. That informs your sentinel what actually to watch out for. No, if sati doesn't know what to look out for, as I said, I mean, there's an endless amount of information in any kind of situation. So it's okay, all right, to be mindful, but it's a question about what are you actually mindful of? What are the instructions? So that's why it's important to have the right view. So that sampajanya, if you like, you know. So that's the master, if you like, in the game. You know, it's a metaphor, no? Who instructs the sentinel, hey, you know, let us know if the chicken is going, you know, is up to mischief, because, you know, we've got a plan here and you've got a role to play in this plan. That's your role. Okay, so if sati's got the right instructions, and if it's well enough established, if it's actually awake and not asleep all the time, it's going to be there watching out for the chicken. And soon as the chicken escapes, it's gonna raise a flag, isn't it? Hey, chicken, no, check out what the chicken is doing. And if it's really sharp, it will not even wait until the chicken is out of the coop. Even, you know, when the chicken is going suspiciously near the fence and is looking mischievous, it's gonna immediately gonna alert, you know, the master saying, oh, watch out, you know, you're going astray, or the chicken is going astray. But then you also need the third one, the right effort. You need some chicken catchers too. You've got the sentinel, mindfulness is well instructed and raises the alarm. And if sampajanya is not in place, no, then the sentinel might say, okay, the chicken. But then if sampajanya just said, oh, how interesting, look how the chicken is running, eh? That looks funny. Well, then it's not going to work, isn't it? Study does its job, but you're not actually doing what you're meant to do with that information. There'll be a few members in your internal council who are going to roll their eyes, isn't it? Oh, here we go again. You know, Abhinandu is not sticking to the plan. The plan was to keep the chicken in the coop. And you say, oh, yeah, was it? Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, never mind. You know, now that the chicken is gone, let's just accept the situation. Because the Buddha said we should be accepting, you know. And so, well, yeah, it's one way of being philosophical about the situation. But metaphorically speaking, that's a bank robber, isn't it? It's not a bank robber, it's a bit of a chaos person. You know, if you don't stay on track with our intentions, you know, if sampajanya doesn't work properly, then mindfulness is weak, no? That's this situation where we mindfully observe ourselves getting into trouble again and again and again, but we don't quite, you know, we just keep finding excuses and, well, you know, that was yesterday and I didn't quite mean it. And actually, I think I was just practicing choiceless awareness anyway, so who cares about the chicken? So that's one thing. But then even if sampajanya is in place and you say, hey, yes, mindfulness is raised, you know, arrest the flag, let's go after the chicken, everybody. And then your chicken catchers, they are playing cards and just saying, well, you know, what's the hurry? You know, we catch the chicken tomorrow. Again, you're in trouble. So that's like sangvara, no? That's what I said, if mindfulness without sangvara is weak. So that would not be the kind of forgetting what was actually my intention and what I actually wanted to do. And being unsteady and setting up our intentions is more like not having the power really of restraint to actually pull things through. No? And that can feel quite humiliating. And it's not, and that's, I mean, we all experience that to a certain extent. We know what we should be doing, or we know what would be good for us, and we know what it's bad for us, and we're actually even noticing that we are following our tendency again, that we have already understood that this is actually not doing any good. But anyway, we can't help it because we haven't built up the whatever, you know, the inner strengths to have these qualities of restraint or determination, aditana, that's another Pali word, you know, and to just stick with it and to pull through. So that's that quality that is within right effort to actually be able to then make actually the appropriate effort. So those are all things that somehow come together in practice in general, but also we can apply to samadhi. Now, otherwise, I mean, samadhi is a nice idea. Without presence, without mindfulness, it's never going to work. But you also, of course, have to some understanding what is actually the strategy. You have to set up the intention and all that, and you're just going to have some internal muscle to actually stick with it, stick with the program. Not all the thing being the stubborn persistence and so forth. So I think it is a bit more than sati that is needed for samadhi, but certainly it's very much a key ingredient. So it makes sense to regard samadhi as a type of knowing. No, I don't think I wouldn't say that. It's more like it gives you a basis for enabling knowing, no? So again, to use an image, you know, like which is from the Buddha, it's like the mind in samadhi, it's like water that is still, you know, think of your mind like, you know, awareness like water. It works in other contexts as well, but here just this thing that also when it's very still, if you're able to hold it still, then anything that's floating in the water goes to the ground, and so you can see very clearly. You know? So a mind that is more still, more calm, is probably gonna be more clear. So you see more clearly. If you reflect, you can reflect more calmly, more deliberately, and that leads to knowing. And interesting enough as well, if it's sama samadhi, so if the mind is calm and still, and clear implies it, it means there's also presence, there's awareness with it. So you're not just calm but sleepy. It's also energized. You know? So it gives it also more energy for investigation. So it's basically your axe is, or your knife is not only sharp, but you've got a good handle, so you can really go to work with it. So it prepares the mind for knowing, but it's not a knowing in itself. And there is awareness of awareness, yes. Yes, if not, liberation wouldn't be possible, I say. But that's just me, so you don't have to believe me. But yes, awareness is self-reflective. That's the wonderful thing about it. That's one of those teachings of Ajahn Tate. Talks about practice like that, you know, this mindfulness practice. You know, like you practice awareness of the different kind of phenomena, like with the four foundations of mindfulness, you know, so you understand all the five khandhas, you know, you go through them, you can see them, that is that, that's not me, that's not mine. And the more, you know, my awareness becomes more powerful, more pure, more clear, the less it is identified with the content of experience. So it becomes more clarity about content of experience and container or awareness of the content. And then the last thing that awareness turns to is awareness itself. No, who is aware? You know, who is aware? And then, well, say, well, turn around, you look, and there's worse, nobody there. Well, that's it. You say, okay, great, so thanks, and you go on. Like, it's like if the mind isn't yet clear enough and charged enough, prepared for that, then it's just another, well, yeah, maybe, okay. But if it's in the right moment, that's also a tool, you know, when you just look at awareness looking at itself, where really experience can turn inside out, so to speak. And it has to do with the fact that, of course, you see there isn't anybody there. Awareness cannot be objectified. And that's intuitive. And how can you trust that? Well, that's the good thing to work out for yourself.